Nathaniel, Chapter 29. Quite how he had arrived there, Nathaniel could not have said. Neither external nexus had been triggered, and not one of them, Nathaniel, Kafka, even Bartimaeus, had heard him enter the house itself. Yet there he was, leaning casually against the loft ladder, brawny arms folded across his chest. Nathaniel's mouth opened. No words came out. Nothing but a horrified gasp of recognition. The bearded mercenary. Simon Lovelace's hired assassin. After the fighting at Headlam Hall 2 years earlier, the mercenary had evaded capture. Government agents had hunted for him high and low, in Britain and across the continent, but without success. No trace was ever found. In time, the police moved on. They closed their files and gave up the search. But Nathaniel could not forget. One terrible image was seared on his memory. The mercenary emerging from the shadows of Lovelace's study, carrying the amulet of Samarkand, his coat stained with the blood of a murdered man. For years the image had hung like a cloud in Nathaniel's mind, and now the assassin stood 2 meters away, cold eyes surveying them each in turn. As before, he radiated a malign vitality. He was tall and muscular, blue-eyed and heavy of brow. He appeared to have trimmed his beard a little, but wore his black hair longer, halfway down his neck. His clothes were jet black, a loose shirt, a padded tunic, trousers broad above the knee, high boots that swelled about the calf. His swaggering confidence battered against Nathaniel like a fist. Nathaniel was immediately conscious of his own paltry strength, of the weakness of his limbs. "Don't bother introducing us, Kafka," the man said. His voice was lazy, deep, and slow. "We three are old acquaintances." The old man gave a long, sad sigh, which was hard to interpret.
"It would be pointless in any case. I know none of your names."
"Names have never been an issue for us." If the jinni was startled, it gave no sign. "You got your boots back, I see," it said. The dark brows knotted. "I said that you'd pay for that, and so you will, you and the boy." Until this moment, Nathaniel had been sitting on Kafka's desk, transfixed by shock. Now, in a concerted effort to assert some authority, he pushed forwards and stood upright, hands on hips. "You're under arrest," he said, glaring fiercely at the mercenary as he spoke. The man returned his gaze with such baleful unconcern that Nathaniel felt himself shrinking and cowering where he stood. In fury, he cleared his throat. "Did you hear what I said?" The man's arm moved, so fast that Nathaniel barely registered it, and a sword rested in his hand. It pointed lazily in Nathaniel's direction. "Where is your weapon, child?" Nathaniel jutted out his chin defiantly and jerked a thumb towards Bartimaeus. "There," he said. "He's an afreet, at my sole command. One word from me and he'll tear you apart." The jinni seemed a little taken aback.
Yes," it said doubtfully. "That's right."
A glacial smile spread beneath the beard. "This is the creature you had with you before. It failed to kill me then. What makes you think it'll have more luck this time?"
"Practice makes perfect," the jinni said.
"How true." Another flicker of movement, another blur about his person, and in his other hand he held an S-shaped metal disc. "I have practiced long with this," the mercenary said. "It will cut through your essence and still return to my outstretched hand."
"By that point you wouldn't have a hand left to catch with," Nathaniel said. "He's fast, my afreet is, like a striking cobra. He'd have you before that thing left your grasp."
He glanced between jinni and mercenary. Neither looked overly convinced.
"No demon is as fast as me," the mercenary said.
"Is that so?" Nathaniel replied. "You just try him."
Bartimaeus raised a hasty finger.
"Now, look here. Give him your best shot."
"I might just do that."
"See what happens to you." "Hey, steady on," the jinni said. "This macho posturing is all very well, but leave me out of it, please."
Why don't you two have an arm wrestle, or compare biceps or something? Work your tensions out that way.
Nathaniel ignored him.
Bartimaeus, he began, I order you...
At that moment something unexpected happened. Kavka stood up.
Stay where you are.
The mercenary's eyes swiveled, the sword point shifted. Kavka did not seem to have heard. He swayed slightly where he was, then tottered forward away from the sofa, across the paper-strewn floor. His bare feet made little crunching noises as he trod upon the parchments. In a couple of steps he had reached the table. A bone-thin arm shot out and seized the golem manuscript from Nathaniel's loose grasp. He stood back, hugging it to his chest. The mercenary made as if to hurl his disk, but paused.
"Put that down, Kavka," he growled. "Think of your family. Think of Mia."
Kavka's eyes were closed. He was swaying again. He raised his face towards the ceiling.
"Mia, she is lost to me."
"Complete that paper tonight, and you will see her tomorrow. I swear it."
The eyes opened. They were dull, but lucid.
"What matter? I will be dead by dawn. My life force is already drained away."
A look of intense irritation had appeared on the mercenary's face. He was not the kind of man who enjoyed negotiation.
"My employer assures me that they are safe and well," he said. "We can remove them from prison tonight and fly them to Prague by morning. Think hard. Do you wish all this work to be wasted?"
Nathaniel glanced at the jinni. It was shifting position slowly. The mercenary did not appear to have noticed. Nathaniel cleared his throat, sought to distract him further.
"Don't listen to him, Kavka," he said. "He's lying."
The mercenary flashed Nathaniel a look.
"It is a matter of intense displeasure to me," he said, "that you are not caught this afternoon in the square. I gave the police the most careful instructions, yet still they bungled it. I should have tackled you myself."
"You knew we were here?"
Nathaniel said.
"Of course. Your timing was most inappropriate. Another day or two and it would have been irrelevant. I'd have been back in London with the completed manuscript. Your investigations would have come to nothing. As it was, I needed to keep you occupied. Hence my tip-off to the police."
Nathaniel's eyes narrowed.
"Who told you I'd be coming?"
"My employer, of course," the mercenary said. "I told the Czechs, and they followed that bumbling British agent around all day, knowing he would eventually lead them to you. Incidentally, they believe you to be in Prague to plant a bomb. But all that is academic now. They let me down."
He had the sword and disk outstretched as he spoke, his eyes flicking between Nathaniel and the magician. Nathaniel's head was a whirl. Hardly anyone had known he was coming to Prague, yet somehow the mercenary had been informed. Which meant... No, he had to concentrate. He saw Bartimaeus still inching sideways, subtle as a snail. A little further, and the jinni would be out of view, in just the right position to attack.
"I see you found another foul traitor to replace Lovelace," he snapped.
"Lovelace?"
The man's brows flickered with mild amusement.
"He was not my main employer, even then. He was nothing but a sideshow, an amateur, much too eager for success. My master encouraged him, as far as it went. But Lovelace was not his only tool, nor am I his only servant now."
Nathaniel was beside himself with fury.
"Who is it? Who do you work for?"
"Someone who pays well. Surely that is obvious. You are a strange little magician."
At that moment, the jinni, which had shuffled successfully to the fringes of the mercenary's gaze, raised its hand to strike. But in the same instant, Kavka acted. All this while he had been standing beside Nathaniel, holding the golem parchment in his hands. Now, without a word, his eyes tight shut, he tensed suddenly, and ripped the manuscript in half. The effect was unexpected. An outpouring of magical force surged from the torn parchment and blasted around the cottage like an earthquake. Nathaniel was tossed into the air amid a maelstrom of flying objects. Jinni, mercenary, table, sofa, paper, pens, splashing ink. For a split second, Nathaniel could see the three visible planes shaking at different rates.
Everything was multiplied 3 times. The walls shuddered, the floor tipped, the electric light crackled and went out. Nathaniel crashed heavily against the floor. The surge poured away through the floorboards, down into the earth. The manuscript's charge was gone. The plane steadied. The reverberations died. Nathaniel raised his head. He was slumped beneath the upturned sofa, looking towards the window. The lights of the city still shone through it, but seemed oddly higher than before. It took a moment to grasp what had happened. The entire cottage had tipped and was perched right on the edge of the hill. The floorboards ran down in a gentle gradient towards the window. As he watched, many little objects came sliding past to rest up against the tilted wall. The room was quite dark and filled with a rustling noise of gently settling paper. Where was the mercenary? Where was Bartimaeus? Nathaniel lay very still beneath the sofa, eyes wide as a rabbit's in the night. He could see Kafka well enough. The old magician was lying face up on his tilted sink, with a dozen sheets of paper floating down upon him in a makeshift shroud. Even from a distance, Nathaniel could see that he was dead. The weight of the sofa pressed heavily upon one of Nathaniel's legs, pinning it to the floor. He dearly wanted to shift it off, but knew it was too risky. He lay quiet, watched, and listened. A footstep, a figure coming slowly into view. The mercenary paused beside the body on the sink, inspected it for a moment, uttered a quiet curse, and moved on to rummage through the scattered furniture near the window. He went slowly, legs tensed against the gradient of the floor. He no longer held his sword, but something silvery shone in his right hand. Finding nothing among the debris, the mercenary began to climb back across the room, head swinging methodically from side to side, eyes squinting in the darkness. In horror, Nathaniel saw that he was drawing ever closer to the sofa. Nathaniel could not retreat. The sofa that protected him from view also trapped him. He bit his lip, trying to recall the words of an appropriate summoning. The mercenary appeared to notice the upturned sofa for the first time. For 2 seconds he stood very still. Then, silver disc in hand, he bent his knees and crouched down to lift the sofa from Nathaniel's cringing head. And Bartimaeus appeared behind him. The Egyptian boy was floating above the tilted floor. Its feet hung limp, its hand was outstretched. A silver nimbus played about its form, flashing upon the white cloth round its waist and shining darkly in its hair. The jinni whistled once, a jaunty sound. In a blur of movement the mercenary spun. The disc left his hand, it whistled through the air, cut through the radiance at Bartimaeus's side, and looped out across the room. "Na-na, you missed," the jinni said. An inferno erupted from its fingers and engulfed the mercenary where he stood. A gobbet of flame enveloped his upper body. He cried out, clutching at his face. He stumbled forwards, casting a red-yellow radiance on the room, glaring through his fiery, clutching fingers. The whistling disc reached the furthest point of the room. With a change of timbre, it doubled back, shooting towards the mercenary's hand. En route, it sliced through the Egyptian boy's side. Nathaniel heard the jinni cry out, saw the boy's form flicker and shake. The disc returned to the burning hand. Nathaniel pulled his leg clear of the sofa. He pushed it frantically from him, and stumbling on the uneven floor, clawed himself to his feet. The Egyptian boy vanished. In its place, lit by the flames, a limping rat scurried into the shadows. The burning man stalked after it, eyes blinking in the heat. His clothes were blackening on his body. The disc glinted redly in his fingers. Nathaniel tried to command his thoughts. Next to him was the loft ladder, which had toppled to lodge diagonally against the ceiling. He steadied himself against it. The rat hurried across an aged parchment. The paper crackled loudly under its feet. The disc sliced the parchment in half. The rat gave a squeak and rolled to the side. Burning fingers moved. 2 more discs appeared in them. The rat scampered away frantically, but was not fast enough. A disc embedded itself in the floorboards, snaring the rat's tail beneath a silver barb. The rat thrashed weakly, trying to pull itself free. The mercenary stalked over. He raised a smouldering boot. With a furious effort, Nathaniel dislodged the loft ladder, causing it to fall heavily upon the mercenary's back. Caught off guard, the man lost his balance and fell sideways in a shower of sparks. He landed on the cottage floor, setting light to manuscripts all around. The rat gave a great heave, pulled its tail free. With a jerking leap, it landed by Nathaniel's side. "Thanks for that," it gasped. "Did you see how I lined him up for you?" Nathaniel was staring wide-eyed at the lumbering figure, who was hurling the ladder from him in a spasm of rage, seemingly indifferent to the surrounding flames.
"How can he survive?" he whispered. "The fire's all over him. He's burning up."
"Just his clothes, I fear," the rat said. "His body's quite invulnerable. But we've got him by the window now. Watch out." It raised a small pink paw. The bearded man turned and saw Nathaniel for the first time. He snarled in rage, lifted a hand, something silver sparkled there. He reached back, and was met with the full force of a hurricane head-on. It rushed from the rat's paw, lifted him off his feet, and sent him backwards through the window, surrounded by a glittering cascade of broken glass and burning scraps of paper that were whipped up with him off the floor. Out into the night he fell, outwards and far away down the hill into the night, his descent marked by the flames still licking up from his body. Nathaniel saw him bounce once, distantly, then lie still. The rat was already racing up the sloping floor towards the cottage door. "Come on!" it cried. "Think that'll stop him? We've 5 minutes, maybe 10." Nathaniel scrambled after it, over piles of smouldering paper, and out into the night, triggering first one nexus, then the other. The drone of the alarms rose up into the sky and roused the inhabitants of Golden Lane from their melancholic dreams, but Rat and Boy were already beyond the ruined tower and racing down the castle steps as if all the demons ever summoned were clamouring at their heels. Late the following morning, wearing fresh clothes and a milliner's wig, and flourishing a new stolen pass, Nathaniel crossed the Czech border into British-controlled Prussia. Hitching into the town of Chemnitz, in a baker's van, he went straight to the British consulate and explained his position. Phone calls were made, passwords checked, and his identity verified. By mid-afternoon, he was aboard a plane departing the local aerodrome for London. The jinnee had been dismissed at the border, since the stress of the prolonged summoning was wearing Nathaniel out. He had had little sleep for days. The aircraft was warm, and despite his desire to puzzle through the mercenary's words, his weariness and the hum of the engines had their effect. Almost before he left the ground, Nathaniel was asleep. An attendant woke him at Box Hill.
"Sir, we have arrived. A car awaits you. You are requested to make haste."
He emerged onto the exit stairs under a light, cold drizzle. A black limousine was waiting beside the landing strip. Nathaniel descended slowly, still scarcely awake. He half expected to see his master there, but the back seat was empty. The chauffeur touched his cap as he opened the door.
"Miss Whitwell's compliments, sir," he said. "You are to come to London immediately. The resistance have struck in the heart of Westminster, and, well, you will see the results for yourself. There is no time to lose. We have an unfolding disaster on our hands."
Wordlessly, Nathaniel climbed into the car. The door clicked shut behind him.